This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to PTBN's NBA Team Podcast. I'm glad to have everybody here as we talk about some off-season things with the Eastern Conference. But before we even delve into it, I want to introduce my co-host Adam Murray.
Hola!
Almost called you my friend Adam Murray, but I don't think we're friends.
Wow, this is just a depressing start to this one.
Well, I mean, how much do you have to go through as co-hosts? Because we've been through a lot, especially with the technical difficulties. Like, how much do you have to go through to like actually become like comrades or compadres or buddies or bros?
Well, the times have changed. It's not like the 80s where you actually, you know, it's the internet. You know, you can be friends with people from all around the world and never see them ever.
I mean, could you actually do a podcast now where a successful one or, you know, a fun one? I don't know if this one's successful, but any kind of podcast where people just don't like each other? Does it kind of make the awkwardness that much funner?
In the end, if I didn't like... you know, you are talking about basketball, we wouldn't have done 80 episodes. We wouldn't carve times out of our days to do this.
Yeah.
It would just be like, you know what, let's just take another month off. Well, maybe we'll do a 1 month special or,
No, we only did that once. I think it was right. I think it was in July where you and I were just like, you know what, we'll come back in August.
Well, that's, you know, that was just with the previews and just, you know, back-to-backs and back-to-backs and, yeah. You know, East-West.
That was my only shame. We weren't kind of in the groove of recording when Banana Boat happened. So, that you know, with DeAndre. So, because that was pretty funny. We were able to kind of talk about it because I remember we recorded it and we were almost sure DeAndre was going to the Mavericks. Like, it was sealed. And then Banana Boat happened and it all went to shit.
Yeah, it was, well, that was just, you know, who could have predicted such craziness for that? But, you know, at the same time, if you don't like someone or like something in general, you wouldn't spend time, period, doing it. It would just be, you know, we actually have to sit down and, you know, prep for this, which I know is
I know it's unbelievable to think about this, but Adam Murray and I actually do preparation and research to think about these things. Like when we do our draft preview, when we do Netflix and Chill, which is going to be an installment for the playoff teams in the Eastern Conference on this episode, we actually think about what we're going to do.
Yeah,
it's scary, but true.
Yeah, it's just in order to have done this for, I think we're on like the 80th or 90th episode now. We would have given up after 10 or 15 or season one and be like, all right, we did it.
I wanted to give up after about 3. I was like, but not nothing you did. You're a great co-host. It was me. There was moments for me where I was like, I don't know if I could do this. You know, it's like even if I had a good episode or a bad one, by my judgment, then there's the judgment of others, which is totally fine. If you don't like this show, if you listen to it and love every single installment, we're glad that you're listening. We're glad for the hits. Keep on coming. It's totally fine. But there are some times where you're like, I don't know if I could pull this off this time, you know. And this is one of the sessions where, you know, we're going through a few episodes and it's like, but... We both love NBA basketball. We really do. As dry as you are, and as boisterous and over-assuming as I am, we both love it. We always find a compromise. We're gonna see if we can kind of come to a compromise with some of these Eastern Conference playoff teams, aka the teams that are not the Cleveland Cavaliers, right?
Well, yeah, not everybody. can be, you know, in the finals and still playing. And even if when, you know, it's all said and done.
Literally, only one of them has been in the finals that's not Cleveland for the last, 6 years?
Well, it was Miami.
Well, let's talk about one from the years before that that was in the finals on two occasions, and that's the Boston Celtics. Now, clearly, the teams that were in the finals under Doc Rivers with the big three of Paul Pierce and Ray Allen and Kevin Garnett and then Rondo, too. I always forget about Rondo. I don't know if anyone's going to be forgetting about Rondo in this free agency session, but that's another story for another day. But this Celtics version, this version of the Celtics, obviously, Danny Ainge is still running the show, but Brad Stevens is the coach. Made an improvement last year. They were the eighth seed in the 2015 playoffs and got swept by Cleveland. They come back in. Isaiah Thomas is in full form as the leader of the team, as the guard. Marcus Smart sort of blossomed. Jay Crowder had a really good year on a really valuable low-level contract at like $6 million. Kelly Olynyk played okay. Amir Johnson, despite his $12 million salary with the team option coming up this next following season, he was able to give him a little bit, and the Celtics were able to get to the first round and push it to six games against the Atlanta Hawks. Just kind of give me a sense of what you saw out of the Boston Celtics.
Well, they all overachieved, regardless of who they were. Look at that. You know, it's just like, oh, it's just a bunch of assorted rookies, and they have no rebounding, and that was their big piece, Amir Johnson and Yurebko re-signing. They didn't really do anything. You know, they're be lucky to make the eighth seed, and you know they're another couple years away. And
yeah,
Oh,
go ahead.
Oh, nobody. Who would have expected that Isaiah Thomas would be an All-Star?
Mm-hmm. Did Avery Bradley improve, or is he about the same?
He was just healthy. Everybody knew he was, you know, a defensive beast. It was just, well, he's out 20 games with a separated shoulder. He's out with a leg injury. He's out with this. He's out with that. He could never stay healthy of the season.
But was it a blessing in disguise that he had the hamstring injury in game one? Marcus Smart comes in, plays really well. It almost turns Avery Bradley into a bargaining chip if Danny Ainge gets a little antsy and instead of waiting for the summer of 2017, where you have tons of cap room, you have a lot of rookie contracts you can move. You can make your move now and try to use Avery Bradley's money to trade so that you can have even more cap space to get some max players.
No, because that exposed Boston's horrible problem of having no depth. If you're back five of the bench are all like developmental rookies, you're wind up playing Terry Rozier for 20 minutes, and it's just like, well, is that what you want? Well, would you rather have James Young?
I think this is a deep team, though, and I'm not even counting the multitude of draft picks because in the draft coming up, and we know they're going to move them around a ton, but we can't figure that in now because we can't predict any moves. But they have 8 draft picks, and they have 3 of them in the first round. Those second round picks, 2 of them are really high at 31 and 35, so maybe they can bundle those 2 together and get another one in the first round if they really want to go for it. But they also had, you know, RJ Hunter and Terry Rozier as first-round picks, and they had a high second-round pick in Jordan Mickey, who they kept. So depth, I don't think, is a problem for the Boston Celtics. It's a matter of who you have there and how many of these guys can really step in, because you can't just keep adding and adding and hoping one of them sticks.
Well, they don't have enough contracts to offer up
but with the new cap, they can make it work. You know,
well, the new cap they can make work, but you can't. They don't have enough. They can only have 15 people, so they have too many people for all these contracts they have now. But again, you know, they don't have depth. But it was the same thing Orlando and like Minnesota faced. Yeah, you have bodies, but none of them are ready to perform. These players might be good 2 years down the line, but you need somebody to come in. And then once Jay Crowder went down, once Avery Bradley went down, there was nobody behind them. Now you're starting Evan Turner, and then who's behind Evan Turner? Nobody.
When you look at the statistics, they're a little bit weird. You know, they were 5th in points per game, but they were 23rd in field goal percentage, which means they really need to tidy up the shooting. Their rim protection, again, was bad. I know the rebounding was really good. That helped a lot that they had a lot of good rebounding guards like Smart and Bradley, and Crowder was a really good defender who can rebound. But at the rim, guys like Kelly Olynyk, Amir Johnson, Tyler Zeller, they just weren't getting it done. You know, they need something there. They might address that in the draft. They're obviously, they were the youngest team in the playoffs, so experience has to go a long way. So these games that they had against the Hawks, they really need to use that as a stepping stone for the future. They can't just forget about what happened, what worked in the playoffs for them, and just try to do something totally different by moving players around. I think continuity for them is really, really important too.
Well, that's you pretty much nailed the problem. Was you have your guards rebounding and you have your centers who weren't.
There were games where Isaiah Thomas was like a better rebounder than Jared Sullinger or Kelly Olynyk. You cannot have that, you know.
Yeah, and then, you know, the problem was Olynyk developed as the three-point threat. You know, he would always take those shots, but now he's starting to hit them. So it's like, okay, so he starts doing that more. And then, well, he's not playing low on the block anymore because, well, I'm just going to shoot threes, and now I'm Walter McCarty. And it's just, you know, they developed, and part of the problem is they're developing faster. They're overachieving more than I think anybody, including, you know, Danny, expected.
Brad Stevens has almost become like an asset. Like, you can use him in the negotiations, whether it be this summer or the following summer, and say, we've got one of the smartest coaches in the NBA. He will figure this out for you, you know?
Oh, yeah, and that's really one of the greatest things is, you know, you have a coach that players want to play for, and he came out of nowhere, and it's like, wow, he's a genius. Look what he's done with this roster. What can he do for me? And, you know, look what he did to Evan Turner's career.
we'll probably talk about it just a little bit. With the third pick in the draft, what do you see there? Just give me like just something, and then we'll move on.
I would like Cousin Jamal, but that's just because I would like a nice little Celtics Murray jersey.
I would like somebody on the team that can make threes. They were 28th in three-point percentage.
But at the same time, you need a rebounder, and, you know, Dragon Bender was probably the safest pick to develop into, you know, him becoming a beast. But, or maybe Lakers do something stupid, and we get, like, Ben Simmons or Ingram all playing.
Okay, let me give you three. You got to give me the percentage chance. Chances that Jaren Sullinger and Tyler Zeller as restricted free agents are both back, either with
zero,
either with matching deals or tenders.
Zeller is not coming back because he was never in the rotation this year. He fell out, and
you think Sullinger will get overpaid?
Somebody might overpay him. I just don't see the Celtics really having that much. I think they're going to want to keep Evan Turner more than.
So that's the other one I was going to say. Chances Evan Turner comes back is unrestricted. You got to pay him more than $6 million a year to really make it work on your cap.
Yeah, you do. He will get more, but at the same time, I think he knows he's in a situation where he can, you know, it's beneficial for him as opposed to just chasing the money.
Yeah, he didn't have like a great year, but it was one of his better years. So in terms of momentum, I think he played his cards right. You know, and good for him. That's what players are supposed to do. Chances they move Amir Johnson and Jonas Jerebko's money.
They are not moving Jerebko because he makes $5 million, and he is a nice cheap player. You know,
a $5 million team option is not the worst idea to pick up. Yeah,
no. Especially when, you know, he has proven to be valuable the way he has.
What about the $12 million for Amir Johnson?
That's more of a tougher one.
Because if you got to find a good big, and those bigs like Hassan Whiteside, even Bismack Biyombo, they're going to make like $15 million at least. You know?
Yeah, that's, you know, we
and you don't want to go all in too early, you know?
Well, yeah, you know, I mentioned that's sort of the downfall is you get players starting making this money. Well, that's what doomed the NBA the last time was. You gave out crazy, stupid contracts to players who didn't deserve it last time.
So this is Netflix and Chill is our theme, just like the previous ones that for the teams that didn't make the playoffs. So we like to talk about, pick a movie that these teams can kind of watch, and we give them an example of why they need to learn a lesson from it. So what movie did you choose for the Celtics?
I got two. Probably disagree with them. I got Rocky and Million Dollar Baby because, you know, they're the young guns that are coming through. And Rocky, you know, he trained so hard, he was the underdog. But in the end, he didn't even win the fight. It, you know, it was...
But he won in Rocky too, didn't he?
But we're not talking about Rocky 2 now. We're talking Rocky. Same thing, Million Dollar Baby.
She breaks her neck on a stool and they have to pull the plug on her.
Well, that's what happened to the team. Jay Crowder got injured and then the team fell apart after that. And they couldn't do anything. So,
man, this is becoming a depressing podcast.
You get far, and that's why Rocky's sort of more the cheerful one, because we have something to build on and just keep that momentum.
My pick was the Outsiders, and I'm not – for the wrestling fans, no, I'm not talking about Hall and Nash. I'm talking about the Francis Ford Coppola, novel adaptation that had this incredible cast with guys like Ralph Macchio and Tom Cruise and Emilio Estevez. And you're looking at – watching and thinking, man, look at all these really good young actors. I mean, they could all do something in the future, but here's the problem. They made the movie when they did. You're not going to get the best Tom Cruise ever in the early 1980s. Same for Emilio Estevez. You can only get out of them what you can get right now. So for the Boston Celtics, I kind of feel that same way. You can only get out of Marcus Smart, Isaiah Thomas, Jay Crowder, and even Kelly Olynyk. You can only get what you have available to you right now. Are they going to be something in the future? Yeah, they probably will. And you got oodles of draft picks to use so that you could try to find another piece to add to it. But I just feel like this is the kind of team where 5 years later, 7 years later, we're going to look at all these players that played under Brad Stevens and say, man, that was a really talented team.
Yeah, but how many of those players are going to see it to the end?
How many of these
will be gone in a year or two?
Some of those guys in the Outsiders did see it to the end. Matt Dillon, I think, was another one. But there are some that just kind of fall flat, like a Ralph Macchio.
Exactly.
Who's Ralph Macchio? That's what we're trying to figure out. let's move on to the Indiana Pacers. They played well throughout the season. They had their ups and downs, obviously. Paul George had a terrific comeback to the season. They went 7 games against the Toronto Raptors, and they got eliminated. Frank Vogel was very quickly ushered out by Larry Bird after that. The replacement, the new head coach, is actually one of the key assistants under Vogel at the time, Nate McMillan. So what do you see there with Indiana? Like, what was let's just go ahead and get our start with the movie. What movie did you have for the Indiana Pacers to stew on?
No pun intended, but I had Indiana Jones and the Crystal Skull. It was just
had Indiana in it.
And I said, like, no pun intended. I know, I know. I watched, but this team has sort of become Kevin Garnett, Minnesota Timberwolves East. It was Paul George and nobody. If Monta Ellis is your second best player and then the third best player is a question mark, you can't. It was just like, aliens? What? Okay, yeah, Harrison Ford.
They were so desperate at guard that they picked up Ty Lawson, who's like a cancer.
And like, disappeared. He didn't even do anything there. He just was like, why did you get him? It was just mismatched, and it was just like, why did you – this is what you came up with? This is the roster you put together? And, Vogel got fired because Bird's like, he's a power forward. We tried it, but I don't like it. Okay, you're gone.
And even though they tried to – Bird, it was, promoting that there were going to be some newness to the team after they moved around, Roy Hibbert, David West. He was kept telling reporters how he wanted to move Paul George to the four, which we knew wasn't going to work, and it didn't. He wound up floating back to the three anyway under Vogel. It still has that kind of that old car smell in a ways with George Hill. I think LaVoy Allen's been there for a couple of years. Solomon Hill is going to be a free agent. So is Ian Mahimi, who played pretty well in the postseason along with Miles Turner. Miles Turner's is a long run type of guy. I mean, he was just a really good pick from where they picked him in that draft. So kudos to Bird there. But for Mahimi, do you think he'll be gone?
Probably. He might price himself. He'll be valuable. But so, what was your movie for this one then?
Kramer versus Kramer. Which is a fantastic movie, but the movie at the end is about a divorce. It's about the kid almost being forced on by himself to choose between either Dustin Hoffman or Meryl Streep. And I kind of feel the same way with the fans of Indiana. It's almost like they have to choose whether Larry Bird really going with Larry Legend is the best way, or that maybe Frank Vogel was on to something and Bird not seeing eye to eye with Vogel and being the overriding power might make them worse.
Okay, fair enough.
The long version is it just kind of made me sad. I didn't want to see Vogel leave Indiana. I think the way that Vogel coached was perfect for Paul George. I thought it was perfect for the people that he had there, particularly that earlier core that he had with Stevenson and Hibbert and West. And when they broke that up, it really put Vogel in a tough position. He also lost his superstar to a broken leg for an entire season.
Yeah, and, you know, Lance Stevenson, him going sort of, that was the undoing of the team. There really was no second option after.
I mean, with McMillan, you're not going to see better offense.
You made a change, but at the same time, it was just more of the same. You'd say, like, okay, we got rid of the coach, but we'll keep all the secondary. We'll just move the next guy up. But we're not going to change too many things. It was,
It seemed like saying a lot more than he can actually pull off. Now he's going to bring somebody in who actually can pull it off. But that's the problem. Can Nate McMillan do it?
Long days ahead for Indiana.
Okay, let's move on to the Detroit Pistons in that same division in the Central. Finally got to the playoffs again for the first time since 2009 under Stan Van Gundy, who's the team president and the head coach. Andre Drummond had a great year. I think he got picked second team All-NBA. Rebounding machine. Defensively, still has issues. He's a restricted free agent, but everybody knows he's going to max out this year. He might even get to $25 million. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope had a nice year. Reggie Jackson had a shockingly good year, even though his late game decision making leaves a lot to be desired. Their biggest problem, obviously, is depth. After their starting five, they never played anybody. Their backup point guard was Steve Blake. Their backup big man, I believe, was Aaron Baines. They didn't really have another big to help out Drummond until they got Tobias Harris in a trade. So, they do have a little bit of work to do around all of this. But what movie did you pick?
I picked Cool Runnings.
Okay.
Because nobody expected this team to do anything. You had said this is another lottery team. They're doomed. All their personnel choices have been questionable. What's up with Stan Van 3000? And all of a sudden, bam, they make this trade, they buckle down, they get John Candy in, and all of a sudden, they made the team. Yeah, granted, they get blown out at the end, but...
So you're saying Tobias Harris is John Candy?
It was a feel-good story that Detroit...
I know Tobias Harris has some baby fat on him still, but that's kind of harsh.
From a team that used to be a laughingstock with Charlie Villanueva and Ben Gordon
Dumars, there's rumors everywhere still here that Dumars will replace Dell Demps in New Orleans, and I keep reminding people, do you know he signed Charlie Villanueva and Ben Gordon in the same offseason, which crippled the franchise for 3 or 4 years?
At the same time, what is Demps?
No.
It's really not, you're replacing a D-plus with a D-plus.
For me, I picked the Terminator, and this is why. Now, the Terminator now is a modern classic. Everybody knows it's one of the best science fiction movies of all time. But when it came out, it was just another... maybe you're old enough to remember this. I think in terms of age, how old are you now?
I'm 36.
So you're 3 years older, so you might have a better memory. The Terminator, the original one with Linda Hamilton and Arnold Schwarzenegger, it wasn't like it won everybody over. It wasn't like this overwhelming success. It was just a really good, solid robot movie. It was almost schlock, if you know what I mean.
Yes, and although I'm apparently the elder statesman, I was still 4 when the movie came out, so it's not like I have much more of a memory than you do.
But what it is that then they did Terminator 2 Judgment Day 7 years later, and it was like the highest grossing movie that year. It was a raging success. People couldn't wait to see it. That's kind of how I felt about the Pistons. I'm not saying that the Pistons people are going to look back on this past season and say, man, what a really good team that was, but it's just that the best is yet to come. Don't change anything because you have a foundation there to build something better, even with all the gaping flaws that the Pistons have. They can improve certain things for sure. Their field goal percentage was god-awful. Their assists were 27th. Their blocks was 30th, which is shocking because of Drummond. But he's not much of a shot blocker, So they definitely got a bunch of holes. The free throws is alarming with Andre Drummond. But it's a foundation that I would definitely not change. When it comes to their starting roster of Reggie Jackson, Andre Drummond, Tobias Harris, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, and Marcus Morris, and also Stanley Johnson, too. I wouldn't change that.
Well, yeah, they have holes and problems, but this is also year one of the start. Of course, you don't come out of the gate and just be,
well,
you
know, it's year two, understand, but it's year one for, like, their playoff run.
Yeah, it's, well, you could say, you know, Orlando and Utah and all these other teams, well, they're in year whatever, but this is year one of, you know, now people are, we made the playoffs. We actually, you know, people actually notice us all of a sudden.
Okay. So. The Charlotte Hornets, shockingly good year. Steve Clifford, a lot of people like him. They think that his teams play ferociously, you know, that they play over their heads. Nick Batum had a great year. Kemba Walker had a really, really good year. He was a bit of a postseason hero for them. Had a 3-2 series lead against the Miami Heat. Then Dwayne Wade went nuts in Game 6, and they got destroyed in Game 7 in Miami. Still doesn't take away from a really, really good year that they had. But I felt like the buzz, no pun intended, I felt like the buzz was sort of superficial, where people were looking at them saying, oh, yeah, Charlotte's back. And it's like, no, they're just a good team with some good players on it, you know?
I've never really had anything good to say about this Charlotte team, and I'm just, I can't, you know, they were smart in dumping Vonleh for Batum, and he fit in perfectly. It's just, I don't see much future hope for this team because there's nobody to develop, and Batum could be priced out quickly. Jeremy Lin's going to be gone.
They might lose Courtney Lee, who really helped them out in that one of those playoff games against Miami.
You know, Kaminsky was, you saw him just get destroyed by Miami.
Yeah, well, he took way too many shots in Game 7. That was just typical, okay, everyone's getting scared of the moment, so we just need the next guy up to just take some shots, and Kaminsky wound up taking too many shots. You know, Cody Zeller, not a terrible player, you know. Marvin Williams had one of his best seasons, but now he's an unrestricted free agent, so he may have priced himself out.
And that's the thing, is they have a lot of questions to answer, so I couldn't even pick a movie.
Mm-hmm.
I struggled with this one. I tried, and it's just like, I don't see anything.
Mine was The Wolf of Wall Street, which is a really awesome movie that Martin Scorsese directed, based on a true story. It stars Leonardo DiCaprio, about a guy who's sort of like swindled the stock market and the mortgage for years and years and years before the feds caught him and he turned into a rat. But the story of it is that, you know, the character that Leo plays, he always has to stay just a little bit ahead of the wise guys and the feds so that he can just keep making his money. And that's how I feel a little bit of Charlotte. I'm not saying the Charlotte to like cheat the salary cap, but what I'm saying for Charlotte theoretically is that they can't get lazy and just think that they can rest on what made them successful this season, because, you know, some teams do that. They have success. I know the Knicks did this when Carmelo had his MVP caliber year in 2013. Some teams get a little bit lackadaisical when they have success for the first time, and they say, well, we don't want to change anything because this worked and it'll work next year. But that's not always the case. I think teams that are not superstar driven like the Charlotte Hornets, you need to stay a step ahead. You need to keep evolving. You need to keep making moves. So I think it's healthy for a situation like this where you got Marvin Williams, Al Jefferson, Nick Batum, they could all leave, but I think that's good. I think it's I think the fact that they can kind of stay ahead and I know it lacks consistency, which is something that a lot of these GMs crave because it makes their jobs easier, like in Memphis. But for Charlotte's sake, I don't think it's the worst idea that you can kind of move pieces around and hope that you can get back in the playoffs, because you don't have a superstar to fall back on.
Yeah, and you can, you know, as much as you love Kemba Walker, they can't just rely on him and only him to do.
And he is not a superstar. He's a really good player, but I don't even think he's an all-star, you know?
Wow, you were, how quick you've changed your tune.
I like Kemba, okay, but he's obviously flawed, you know? I mean, if I want a little guard, I'll take Isaiah Thomas, you know? But for Kemba, he's a terrific player, you know? But Al Jefferson, he might retire. I don't know. Michael Kidd-Gilchrist didn't play at all. You know, he played like what, 7 games?
So yeah, so they they have questions, you know, so...
But what I'm saying is, change is okay. Don't get scared if, you know, Batum leaves, Al Jefferson quits, Marvin Williams goes somewhere else, everyone's saying, oh, this team fell apart. I mean, we felt the same way about Portland, and how wrong were we there, you know? Let's talk about the Atlanta Hawks, who, I mean, I like them. You know, they had a terrific year in 2015, and they got swept by the Cleveland Cavaliers. The same thing happened at the end of the postseason this year. They just didn't have as successful of a regular season. There was a lot of talk that they might move a lot of pieces around the trade deadline, and it didn't happen for different reasons. But Mike Budenholzer, I think, has a little bit of a task on his hands. My movie that I chose here was a comedy that Steve Carell was in with Keira Knightley called Seeking a Friend at the End of the World, because I feel like next season, next summer in 2017, where they have boatloads of free agents from, you know, Paul Millsap with an opt-out, Jeff Teague, Dennis Schroeder is a restricted free agent, Kyle Korver, Thabo Sefolosha, all those guys are going to be free agents of some sort next year. And then you got unrestricted free agents, Al Horford, Kent Bazemore, and then Mike Scott's a restricted free agent this summer. What I'm saying for the Atlanta Hawks that scares me is that you might be looking potentially at a complete, utter overhaul by 2017.
Yeah, that's the problem, is they had so much success last year, they tried to recapture it, and, you know, however, they did that by, you know, they couldn't keep the entire team together, so, they, you know, Carroll was the casualty. And
yeah, and just like Charlotte, just standing pat isn't always the best thing to do.
And they didn't replace him with anybody. Bazemore did what he could, and you know, he'll get paid and probably price himself out of Atlanta. It's just, you know, you don't have all these rumblings about breaking up the team. Okay, no, we're going to go for it. We're going on. And then you get destroyed in round two by Cleveland.
And now you're getting that mindset of, all right, now we've fallen back another round. We got embarrassed again by the top team in the East. This isn't getting any better. We need to make moves right away. And this is where you know, I think Horford's gone no matter what. I really do. And then you might move Millsap, because you could get really good value out of him right away because he had his best season this year. Jeff Teague, they tried to move already, but he's only an $8 million guy next year. You might want to keep him.
Well, he's a cheap guy, but it seems that he and Schroeder can't coexist. Horford has too many suitors for him to probably want to come back. And Korver has finally shown his age. We were waiting for that. Every year, she's like, okay, this will be the year he's going to start missing.
Yeah, he might retire next year, you know? I mean, next year might be his last year as a player.
And they've traded all their first-round picks away every year and gotten, you know, they got Tim Hardaway Jr. was their
pick. They've got three this year. They got the 21, and then the other ones are the 44 and the 54 in the second round. So you're saying it is important this year for Atlanta to do something with that pick, whether it be size, because their rebounding was still really bad at 25th, or maybe an attacking guard, try to get more free throws.
Well, they got to do something because this team doesn't look like they're going to be back together next year.
Oh, absolutely. I agree there. Like, the makeup of – like, the team as we knew it in 2015 – at least, like, two or three of those key players will be gone. I think Millsap, I think Horford's gone. I think Kent Bazemore was there on the team, but he didn't start because of Carroll. But I think Bazemore's gone. I think Horford's gone. And I think there's a chance that Mike Scott will get overpaid.
Scott might get overpaid, and, you know, what do you, you know, you can try to keep Teague, but you can't platoon their minutes anymore, so...
And you got those $8 million that you have to owe to Tiago Splitter.
Yeah, that's not looking like a good signing at all.
But, I mean, is it sort of a situation where you just weren't big fans of the Hawks and they had their expectations got raised a little too high? Or do you feel like this is sort of the life stage of an NBA team on their run and that Atlanta is just at the end of theirs? It started, I believe, around 2013 when they let go Josh Smith and they sort of moved on with other guys, and now we're at, you know, if we count the numbers, you're at year four of that process. Is it just one of those things where you're at the end of your run with these guys?
Yeah, you're at the end of your run. It's only so long a player can be in his prime, and you've got, you know, Horford, who was, you know, he's obviously out with that.
Well, it's not just prime, it's how it works. Remember, Millsap played with Al Jefferson in Utah, and it kind of worked, but you knew they couldn't sustain it. And the Jazz were smart. They got out when they could. when they were free agents, they said, leave. We'll just reboot and see what we can do.
Well, they just said, we're not going to be into a bidding war for this. You guys,
exactly.
We want you, but we're not going to be dumb and cripple our team. And, you know, in retrospect, with the way the salary cap just got overblown, yeah, they could have, you know.
Will they do it with Horford?
They will try to keep him, but I think if you have teams, you know, you hear Houston wants him, you hear Miami wants him, you hear Boston wants him.
I'll tell you one thing that's hurting Al Horford, though. He did not have the best year last year.
He didn't have the best year last year, but did anybody of that team, that one year was just they were on fire, and then all of a sudden.
I thought Schroeder had moments where he looked really good, where you could look at him and say, man, he could be a starting point guard on a really good NBA team if it happened.
Well, that's the thing with Cedric Reggie-Jackson. It's just you look good in flashes, but it's a lot different playing 40 minutes as opposed to playing 20.
True.
So.
Let's go ahead and move on with the Miami Heat. What movie did you pick here? I mean, I got a lot to talk about with Miami, but I wanted to hear your movie.
I went with Mission Impossible because every year they have zero cap room. Every year they somehow manage to get, you know, Dragic, and they get, you know, Joe Johnson comes there, and some, you know, Bosch goes down for 2 years in a row. But, oh, here's Whiteside. Last year, here's D-League players who were out of nowhere. It's just like, every year, it's like, well, how are they going to put this together? How are they going to make the playoffs? How are they going to make a run? And they somehow do it.
So it's like Tom Cruise on the Suspenders, like always just trying to figure something out.
It's not how
is that Dwayne Wade or is that Eric Spoelstra?
It's Spoelstra. It's not how the plan goes, but somehow.
And Pat Riley is Ving Rhames, where he's just on a computer screaming at it half the time. Or is that Simon Pegg?
Well, no, in that case, I would say 21 Jump Street and Riley would just be Ice Cube.
Now you're really, you're supposed to be the old guy and you're talking about the 21 Jump Street that they reboot instead of the Johnny Depp. What's that other guy's name? Cisco?
I don't know,
whatever. But nobody likes that 21 Jump Street anyway. For the Miami Heat, a really good year overall. You know, before Chris Bosh had another issue with the blood clots that sat him out for the rest of the year, he was having an all-star year again. I mean, I know it sounds crazy, but Bosh is deserving of his max money, in my opinion.
Well, he always was. It was just he was the third part, and he has just been, you know, is his game really different than what it was in Toronto once LeBron left? No, he went back to doing what he did. And
the three-point shooting is the one key difference. He worked on his three-point shot.
He quietly got better, and, you know, it's unfortunate. You know, nobody knows what's going to happen to him in the future. And
now, they got issues here with Dwayne Wade and Hassan Whiteside. They desperately want to keep him. Wade will probably come back no matter what, regardless of whatever deal they gave him. They have his bird rights. They could go past the cap, or they could go over and not have his money go against the cap if they have to. If they want to sign him for $20 million, they can. Whereas with Whiteside, they're going to have to pay up to get him, but I think they'll try to re-sign him at all costs. Do you think that's the right move?
It's one of those, you're sort of damned if you do, you're damned if you don't.
Yeah, they got him over a barrel, you mean.
You let him go, all right, well.
You're losing the best shot blocker in the NBA.
But if you keep him, well, who's to say he wasn't? You know, there's times he looked disinterested there in Miami. And,
yeah. Well, but, know. I mean, when he's engaged, I mean, we saw it against Charlotte. When he's engaged, he looks great. And when he went down, now, they got a little lucky because right after he got hurt with the knee, which had been bothering him going into that series, Jonas Valanciunas went down with the ankle, which sort of like what's good for the goose is good for the gander kind of thing, one of those karma type of deals, which even things out. But, you know, obviously in the paint they struggled. Their three-point shooting is abysmal, which is never a shock under Eric Spoelstra, okay? The problem, though, was that their three-point percentage was 25th in the league, which is really bad. Steals-wise, pretty bad. They play super-duper slow. They don't move the ball around a lot. But with Goran Dragic there, that shouldn't surprise anybody. Goran is very much a one-on-one guy.
Yep, and, you know, Justice Winslow, he's going to be a nice development.
Winslow and Josh Richardson were both inspired picks by the Heat's, you know, administration.
Well, those were just lucky picks. And
yeah, but how much of that is skill, finding a good player in the second round?
Second round? Well, nowadays, you can find them. Mm-hmm. It's times have sort of changed where, well, especially this upcoming draft where it's just all potential in the first round, and then you're going to have some nice names slide in the second round. You know, we mentioned Jay Crowder already, and, you know, you said with...
Now, they have a lot of cap room to work with, but we already talked about the fact that Wade and Whiteside are free agents, so that's probably going to fill you right at the cap. So now you got some decisions to make with Joe Johnson, Luol Deng, Gerald Green, and Tyler Johnson, who are all unrestricted free agents. Which ones do you expect to be gone?
Johnson will probably be gone. Gerald Green already fell out of the rotation. And
I think they could keep Tyler Johnson at like $6 million or $5 million a year.
They have a lot of, you know, they have cap room, but how much money does Wade want? He's deferred to the team before, and, you know, Miami's going to pitch him.
But Miami has a history of getting guys to take less.
They're just going to, you know, they're going to sit him down and be like, look, do you want to be like Tim Duncan and Dirk Nowitzki, you take less for the team, or do you want to be like Kobe and you get paid and your team will suck because it's just you overpaid?
Okay, so, and Amari Stoudemire, does he even play next year?
It'll play, but it'll be the Kendrick Perkins. Well, 10 minutes here, 10 minutes there.
So you expect him back in Miami?
He'll probably stay there, and he'll probably just be veteran minimum.
And they also have a little bit to work with in terms of bringing in veterans or re-signing who they already had going into the playoffs because they don't have draft picks. So you don't have to add on rookie deals. Whatever you are at that cap, you know, which is, you know, they're going to be right up against it after their negotiations are done with Wade and Hassan Whiteside. They're going to be right there on the fringe. So, you know, they could use a mid-level exception, maybe the mini mid-level exception. But, you know, after that, there's really not a lot of wiggle room here. So are you a little bit afraid of the fact that they can't improve their roster from what they already have? Or are you looking at the bright side? Because like you said, they've been so cursed with all these impossible missions of trying to make it work without Bosch that if they have Bosch healthy for 1 year alongside Whiteside and Wade and Dragic, now you're looking at a really good team.
Well, that's the thing. Every year, how are they going to do it? It's impossible. It's a death trap, and all of a sudden, somehow they pull it out and remain competitive, and how are they going to get Dragic? They have no cap room, and where they get... no tradable assets, and they somehow got him. How did that happen?
Yeah, mine was The Conjuring, because it just feels like they're cursed. It feels like their biggest enemy is something that they can't even see. You know what I'm saying? It's like it's almost like the other shoe always drops on Miami ever since LeBron left. You know, with LeBron, it just seems like everything kind of comes up your way. You know, Cleveland, it certainly happened. It's happening now. Whereas with Miami, it's almost like a ghost. It's almost like something's haunting them. But, you know, I think the future is still good for Miami. I think things are going to be all right. Let's go ahead, and we're going to be at the last two, the two conference finals participants. We'll start with Toronto. Give me your movie for the Toronto Raptors.
This is going to be depressing because they had the best season of all time. It's just, I picked Armageddon because I didn't want to be a downer on this. I tried so hard not to.
You try not to be a downer. Tried.
But what's Armageddon? It's just a bunch of ragtag guys who, you know, went to go save their... you know, save the world. You know,
Ben Affleck lives, so that's the best.
They brought back basketball to Canada, but DeRozan, they need to re-sign at all costs. Biombo, great sign. Like I said, you know, beginning of the season preview, I'm like, this is the best signing of the year.
But it was also a bit of a curse because now they can't afford him. It's impossible.
Now he's priced himself out. They have no real backup options. And if DeRozan leaves, the team is just – it's going to be Chris Bosh, Vince Carter heartbreak all over again for them.
You know, I was listening to Nate Duncan's podcast, who's one of the NBA guys, huge on cap space. And he was talking about potentially, if you really look at it, that the Raptors are better off letting DeRozan walk in free agency. Do you agree with that?
Well, who are you replacing him with? That's the thing. You let him go.
They'll have a lot more cap space when Lowry's deal's up, and then you can get two max guys.
And then, so you're going to let them go and they're going to be horrible next year.
Kind of, yeah. That's sort of his mindset. But listen, that's staring at numbers. You know, when you're staring at numbers, that's fine.
It's going to be a heartbreak if that happens, though.
Mm-hmm. Because we talked before about how, you know, teams stand pat a little bit too much when they have success or when they have the most success they've ever had. And people are like, well, don't change a thing. You know, whereas for me, only finals teams should do that. you know.
Well, finals teams are if you have the blue plan, like Detroit and, you know, like you said with Boston, if you have the way you're going, yeah, you stay on Pat and wait for it to happen. But if you let DeRozan go, all right, this is now Valanciunas' team, and, well, you've lost Biombo, so there's no...
Yeah.
You've really... Well, okay, well, now you have money. Well, who can you really get with your money? This isn't the year for free agents.
Yeah, the movie I picked was Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, which is a fantastic late 60s movie. I think it actually is on Netflix. I think this is the first time we picked one that actually is on Netflix instant. But you know, Butch Cassidy, Sundance Kid, Robert Redford, Paul Newman, they're cowboys, they're outlaws. And at the very end, against all odds, they just say, you know what, fuck it. We're going to go down in a blaze of glory. And it goes to a still shot of them right before they get shot down and murdered in grisly fashion. But I feel like with DeRozan and Lowry, I really feel like they should just go in on it together. I don't really like the idea of them apart.
Agreed.
Jonas Valanciunas, how good can he be?
He's developing. How good can he be? Well, how much is he going to be a focal point? He's just like, going to be an ancillary piece.
Will he be better than a Cousins? Like, will he be comparable?
I don't think he can, because he's already year five in the league.
But better than a Tyson Chandler. Like, now, Tyson Chandler was, like, at one point, the pillar defensively of what made the Dallas Mavericks a championship team. Can Valanciunas be that kind of player for the Raptors, if they can make a few more changes?
Well, Valanciunas is also more of an offensive, you know, he was a defensive pillar, but again, he was a defensive pillar and offered absolutely nothing. This is what Cleveland is hoping when Tristan Thompson becomes.
Yeah.
You know, Valanciunas, they're, you know, Cousins, he's a, you know, 20-10 guy repeatedly. You're hoping for that. And
yeah, and they're one of the very few teams where their guard spot is set, because you got Lowry for another year before he is certain to opt out after 2017. And Corey Joseph was a very good backup. I wouldn't even think about changing that. So, and Norman Powell, who was a rookie, who played a little bit, so, and Darrell Wright. So you got options there at the guard spot. Terrence Ross is signed through 2019. What are the chances that Damari Carroll opts out at his $9.5 million and leaves Toronto?
When?
What do you mean?
Damari Carroll opts out.
It's this year. He can take $9.5 million and pick it up, or he can explore free agency.
He might, but I don't know. It's a question I never thought of.
That's a really, it's a tough one. You know, because he's a good fit there at small forward. You know, we questioned it when they signed him, but it was a good plug-in. Losing Biombo is going to hurt, because he did so much for them in the playoffs. I mean, that's just one of those typical, you play well in the playoffs to make your money type of deals. You know, he was that guy. We always talk about who that guy is going to be in the playoffs that really makes money for himself, and Biombo was that guy. But unfortunately for the Raptors, now they're in a position where people are desperate for big men, and now Biombo may have priced himself out of being in a winning situation.
Pay him $17 million? That's crazy.
Okay, Cleveland Cavaliers. In terms of cap space, they can't do anything because they're already loaded. LeBron James, Kyrie Irving, Kevin Love, J.R. Smith's a free agent. I'm sure he'll go back. Mo Williams, who cares? Tristan Thompson signed. Matthew Dellavedova will probably come back. Timofey Mozgov is already out of the lineup. Channing Frye was a really good fit there. Richard Jefferson's old, so we don't know if he'll even come back. But in terms of cap space, they can't really do anything anyway. They're already over. They're already in the luxury tax. Or close to it after the new numbers come out. But for Cleveland, what movie do you have here?
I just picked one of your comic book Marvels, Avengers. They're just a high-priced team, and, you know, they're going to replace, you know, old guys with other old guys. They're not going to develop new players. They're just going to buy.
Now, they brought in Jordan McRae, though, who wound up, you know, sticking to their playoff roster, which means they like him.
Yeah, but he came in, but for the most part, well, you could get a rookie, or let's just get a veteran who knows, you know, Richard Jefferson. He might, you know, there should be something left in the tank for him, and, you know, they're just a high-priced movie, a big budget, mm-hmm. big green screen, $250 million budget.
Yeah. And well, let's go back to that whole summer of 2015. Was it the right decision for Cleveland to do that, or was it the only decision? Had they put themselves in a situation where they got so far with that nucleus that they couldn't break it up?
Well, that's what usually... Well, they usually have to break up because the owner's like, I don't want to pay luxury tax.
And then Dan Gilbert said, fuck it, I'll pay that luxury
tax.
Yeah,
he's like, I don't care, I will do it, and I don't care if I'm in salary cap hell, and I don't, it doesn't bother me. And look at, Oklahoma City had to break up because he refused to go, because Clay Bennett refused to go on the luxury tax, and most owners like, no, I need that revenue money coming back. I'm not paying a cent extra. And he's, fuck it, we'll go $1 million over. Let's go $10 million. Let's go $20 million over. Who cares?
They went well over based on the old cap numbers. Now, the new ones are still $11 million over, which is unbelievable. But, hey, if you're not in that luxury tax, you're okay, as long as you can find, ways to wiggle around it with, like, the mid-level exception and bird rights and all that stuff. We know LeBron's going to opt out and get $30 million, but the question to me is, will he opt out again in 2017 for more money?
Well, I think this might be the last contract he goes for.
Okay, so you think he'll go with whatever he can now?
Because he's 32 now, 31. Okay.
Yeah.
So if he opts out this year and next year, there's not going to be a 5-year deal for, $40 million for a 37-year-old player who's been in the league for 20 years at that point.
I'll say this, LeBron at 37 still might average about 20 points, 8 rebounds, and 5 assists.
He has been lucky that he has been free from injury, but those are so many miles on those legs. And
you think he'll fall apart eventually?
He will start. We've seen him slow down. He became a power forward because he slowed down.
Is Kevin Love, was that a worthy contract, the $21
million? It was, you have to make LeBron happy, and if he wants Love, he wants Love.
I mean, and he's the third wheel. He's a good third guy in a big three, I'll say that. I almost debate if that's a better big three than him, Bosch, and Wade. But when I think about the youth of Wade and Bosch at that time when they were winning titles, I don't know if you can compete with that after all. Let's just look at it as we wrap up the rankings here. You would still have Cleveland number one, right?
Yeah.
Now, at number two, would you put in Miami, Toronto?
As far as what? Who has stuff to look forward to?
Exactly, yes.
Detroit?
Okay, so you like Detroit number two over Miami.
Let's look at the other teams. Toronto, Miami, Atlanta, Charlotte, Indiana have roster salary problems they need to address. The only two teams right now who seem to have a nucleus they like is Boston and Detroit. And Boston is just waiting for a superstar.
Yeah,
Detroit is just waiting to get older.
But the problem with Boston is we don't know if it's going to happen this summer or next summer where they drop the hammers and Danny Ainge says, okay, let's go for it.
So Detroit is the only team that has sunny days ahead. Everybody else has, we got decisions to make. It might be all sunny at the end, but you see some clouds.
I think Miami's got something to look forward to if they can get a good prognosis for Chris Bosh where he can be fully healthy for an entire season.
You had a good prognosis, but
I think those rumors about them trying to work out like a stretch provision for it, I don't think that's possible.
They can't work out a stretch provision. If you retire, you come off the books.
But you read that same item, though, like a month ago, right, where they were like, oh, well, can we make this money work with Chris Bosh if we let him go somewhere else? Which I don't think is possible.
They're not going to let him go. They're just going to say either you can play or we get the money back because you can. They're not going to say we're going to cut you for no reason because you might or might not play.
I agree. I think that'd be pretty wrong anyway. You said you're low on Charlotte. I'm a little higher than you on Charlotte. Atlanta, I'm really looking down on them, man. I'm not trying to pick on the Hawks. I'm not a big fan of the Atlanta fan base anyway for basketball. But when it comes to the Hawks, I think you talked about Armageddon. I think Armageddon's on the way for those guys.
Yep.
Any other things that you wanted to mention about any of the Eastern Conference teams before we get out of here with Netflix and chill?
Nope, it's on to the season, it's on to the draft, and it's on to free agency for all these teams, and we'll have a better outlook when we get, we reconvene with these teams in the late summer.
Weirdly, the other team that's got the other pick that they can use is Toronto. Toronto's got a few options in the top of the draft.
Oh, I mean, that's another topic for another day. They have people, but they also have issues.
Exactly. And so on behalf of Adam Murray, this is Andrew Reich. Take care, everybody.